Have it with Furry. Furry in the right circle. Furry up on top to Livingstone. Livingstone to Furry. Hit it. Here's Fitzgerald. And he scores! Fitzgerald scores! And a rebound off the side of the net. And he jams it in. The short post. And the Mavericks have risen from the dead. And this game's deadlocked at 2 goals each. That shot into the corner comes out. Mavericks pick it up and bring it down to the 2-on-2. Now spinning around is Krainic. Backhander, he scores! He scores! Jack Krainic with the game winner on a backhand. They overmatch the defense coming in up the left wing side, and the Mavericks with another championship miracle goal in their own building, and they are NCAA bound.
And CCHA playoff champions. Wow, Krainic with a great spin.
From BLC Studios in Mankato, Minnesota, this is the Maverick Hockey Live Podcast, presented by Duncan, with your host, Shane Frederick.
Welcome to the Maverick Hockey Live Podcast, presented by Duncan. My name is Shane Frederick, I'm your host, and joining me this week is Minnesota State Junior Center, Andre Pavel. How's that? Was that a good pronunciation?
That was awesome. I
want to get it right.
That was awesome. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Glad you're here. We've been hoping to get you on for a while. Obviously, this is a big week for you guys, so I'm glad we were able to squeeze you in before you guys finish all your prep and head up to Fargo, North Dakota for the Western Regional for the NCAA tournament, where you guys will play St. Cloud State on Thursday at 4 p.m. The winner of that game goes on to play the winner of top-seeded Minnesota and Canisius, which is the last team into the tournament. So pretty exciting week for you guys, coming off an unbelievable game on Saturday night in the Mason Cup championship game. I guess, first of all, what's going through your mind this week? It's got to be a whirlwind between the way that game ended and going into the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. It's a quick turnaround after what a roller coaster of a game that was on Saturday. To be fair, we still, especially for me, it is like I still don't really believe it that really happened. I remember when even before I came to MSU, I used to watch, you know, that Nick Rivera goal against Bowling Green, and that was kind of the same sequence of events. And well, now it happened for us too. So I'm glad that I was fortunate enough to live it.
It's funny that you were familiar with the 2019 game, because it was such a unbelievable finish. You know, it felt like something you would never see again, especially having to score two goals as opposed to one. It's not uncommon to see one, but to see two goals, and then to win in overtime. And if you look at the timestamps of those goals, I mean, it was almost a carbon copy of that game. And, you know, was there a point, you know, especially after you guys got the first one, which you scored, that you felt like, you know, history was kind of repeating itself?
Yeah, I believe that, especially like on that 10-minute mark, you know, the time starts running a little bit faster for you, and you get all anxious, you know, and the emotions start to pour in, and you're just trying to figure out a way of, like, how can, like, staying positive. Okay, we can do this. We can do this. How are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to get through it? And then it's all about that first goal. And once that first goal, all the emotions just start flooding in, like, all right, this is it. You know, the building start to came alive. All that noise, all of those people that came to see us that day, that was absolutely unbelievable. And then suddenly the game completely shifted. Like, even in the third period, it was very frustrating sometimes for us, you know, to stay level-headed and play against, you know, in the third period, it's kind of a chuck-a-puck when you're just trying to get right. An end zone. You want it so bad to get that first goal, but it's still not working out. And then once you get it, it's unbelievable how quickly the momentum can shift in your favor. And I believe that once that first goal came in, we all knew what's going to happen. I believe that one thing that this group has is its resiliency, and we always believe no matter what, and even if it doesn't go our way, the hockey game is 60 minutes and more sometimes. So, you know, we always believe that we can do it no matter what the score is.
And you know, for, you know, I was, the one difference I thought personally, you know, having experienced both of those games, the difference between the Bowling Green game and the Northern Michigan game was the Bowling Green game. I felt Minnesota State really didn't get anything going the entire game. It was just a very stifling game by Bowling Green that night until the comeback at the end. The difference I thought Saturday against Northern Michigan was that you guys had great chances. I thought it was a great hockey game, back and forth, up and down, both goalies playing great. The only difference is they were able to cash in on a couple of plays, including a breakaway goal. And by the way, you know, Keenan Ransier, hats off to him. He gave up one breakaway goal, but he had other ones to stop as well, including a penalty shot. So he deserves a lot of credit. And so it was a big back and forth game, but it was 2-0 until Simon Tassi centers the puck. And where did it go in off of you? Because I don't know if it got to your stick or not, or did it?
I believe it hit my foot, to be honest. So okay. we were kind of joking after this that. Sabatassi came up to me and he was talking about it like, yeah, that was, I shot it right at your foot. And I was like, no, that was totally skill. I totally meant to do that. And so we were kind of having a little bit of back and forth of like, what kind of intent that was. But I believe that it was a great play by him. But exactly how you said, you know, we can look at the game two ways. On one side, we had a lot of chances. Their goalie, I got to get enough credit to the Northern Michigan hockey team, because I thought they were playing very well, and we did too. We're like, both teams showed up in their best possible condition. So on one side, you know, we can be okay, we had a lot of chances, but on the other has exactly like you said, Keenan Ransier saved us a few goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially on the breakaways.
Yeah, and you know, you couple that with a great play by Akito Hirose to kind of make up for letting the puck get out of the zone, and obviously a very good open ice, open net chance that Northern Michigan could have put it away and made it 3-1. And instead, Akito makes a great play. You guys kind of gather yourselves, get back into the zone, and not that long later, Christian Fitzgerald puts one over the goalie to tie the game, and the building went absolutely bananas.
Absolutely. That the ending will forever be stuck in my head. I believe that, you know, these games don't come very often, and you can even make comparison to the Michigan Tech game, which it was a kind of a little bit the same scenario there too. So I believe that it's a lot of fun for the fans, not that much of a fun for the parents, especially the older parents. My dad was in the building for a Michigan Tech game. He was saying, like, come on. You gotta keep doing this to me. You can just put the game away earlier than 5 minutes left, you know?
Sure.
So I feel like it's kind of funny, but it's absolutely incredible when you end up on top of those games.
Yeah, and so, you know, congratulations. And you know, you guys knew going into the game, right, that you had to win to keep the season going, right? I mean, it was pretty much everybody crunched all the numbers, played out all the scenarios, and I don't think, going into Saturday after Friday's games that there was a scenario where you make the NCAA tournament unless you win.
Absolutely. I wasn't really paying attention to all of the numbers, but I actually found it out just on Sunday that if we would have lost that game, we would have made it. I thought that it was still going to be a little bit of chance, but then the way it played out, it surprised me that actually those 2 minutes saved our season, and now we can see where it goes from here.
So we mentioned that the Mavericks will play up in Fargo. It's a town you know well. You played your junior hockey in that building. Was that exciting for you to see that you were going to Fargo as opposed to any of the other cities and a place that you're familiar with? Obviously, playing an opponent you're familiar with too.
Absolutely, I was. I saw the four different cities that were hosting the NCAA regionals this year, and I immediately saw Fargo. And then, as soon as you know the potential brackets kept coming up, you know, or what I heard from the guys that they were seeing it on Twitter and stuff, I was like, okay, please, let's go to Fargo. It's 5 hours away. It's going to be a great crowd. It's a great building. It's a good city. I was very pleasantly surprised that we're going to go there, and especially like we can just be calling the Minnesota bracket plus Canisius at this
right,
point.
Right.
So I'm very excited by the opponents too. I believe that's those are going to be some good hockey games to watch. And I even have a few friends on the Canisius team from my time when I played in North Dakota in Minot in the Knoll Hockey League. And I believe that my captain actually from that time is playing for Canisius right now, his senior year. So it would be awesome to see all of those guys in one place again. And then both the Gophers and the St. Cloud have Force alumni on their team. So it's going to be very exciting to play against them in their own building. And then I remember when I was leaving Fargo, actually, one of my regrets was that I never got to play a playoff game in that building, because my first year we got knocked out by Des Moines Buccaneers at their own rink. And then the second year got ended by COVID. So one of the things that I was talking about always was that I never got to actually experience a playoff atmosphere at that ring, which was one of my regrets. So now, funny thing how life works. Now I'm going to get one back.
How about that? That's great. Well, so staying on that topic, you mentioned Minot. You played at Minot. You played in Fargo. But you're from the Czech Republic. And how I guess, tell me a little bit about this journey. And some people know it. It's not as familiar to me. How you ended up in the U.S., how you ended up in the Midwest, in the junior hockey ranks. I think you came here actually prior to going to the North American League, right?
Yes.
Iowa, is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
How did that work? How did you end up there, from a development standpoint, as opposed to staying home for that?
The whole process kind of took off in a hurry. I remember it was on a very short notice. The first of the events that kind of started all of this was the U-17 World Championship, I believe it was called. It was held in Sault Ste. Marie in Canada, and I was fortunate enough to get nominated and play there with my Czech national hockey team. And I had a pretty good showing, and I remember when I got home, I got a call from one representative of this agency, and they were like, "Hey, would you like to come and play in the United States?" And I always wanted to play in the United States because for me and my family, education is a big part of our lives, and I always wanted to pursue education, at least on some level. I didn't want to just finish high school and be done with it and go play professional hockey, because sometimes, you know, life doesn't work that way. And it is very hard to do just that, to play professional hockey, also do schooling on a collegiate level in the Czech Republic. So I decided to move to America and to start with the Iowa Wild U-16 AAA, I believe it was called, the full name of that team. And always with the mind that I wanted to play college hockey and to get my college degree. So from there, it was just a sequences of like playing good enough hockey to get recruited that level above it, and then just keep climbing that ladder from that U-16 league all the way up to college hockey, where I'm, in this amazing program that we are in right now.
That's amazing. I mean, were you two years in Iowa? And a year in?
It was kind of like a half year in Iowa. It was, okay. I came in on December. I believe the sequence was just literally, it was like, at first it was, do you want to come to the United States? I was like, yes, I want to. And then it was, there was a little bit of period of like looking for a spot. And then I got called like December 10th of 2016. It was, okay, so we got a spot for you. Would you like to come? And yeah. The only thing, you got to leave within like 3 days. I was like, well, my bags are packed. Let's do this. Not a second thought. I was like, let's do this. We got this. So I sat on a plane, and in 3 days, I already played a tournament in Detroit with the Iowa Wild. And then I finished that year, and then I got drafted to the, I actually failed at the main camp. I didn't get into the Chicago Steel main team in the USHL. And then I got drafted by the Minotauros and Knoll. And I ended up playing a full year for them and then go to Fargo. And I played 2 years at Fargo. And then I ended up in Mankato.
When did Minnesota State get into the picture in terms of recruiting? Were you in Minot or were you already in Fargo?
It was after the Minot year. We managed to get all the way into the final of the Robertson Cup. But then we lost to Shreveport, I believe. Okay. And after that season, I got recruited, and I I visited here in the summer, and I got officially recruited and asked to come here by Coach Hastings that summer.
Wow, and you know, kind of the rest is history. I mean, you've had I know you didn't play a lot your first year, and but the last 2 years you've definitely had an impact. And you know, it's I think what's fun about your game for fans is to really watch a defensive forward at work. And I think sometimes fans, you know, the casual fan will sometimes kind of miss out on what players are doing, but I think people are become more aware. And I have to ask you about this, I guess, first of all, because you've done this a few times, you're kind of getting known for it. I've seen players do it from time to time, but watching you on the penalty kill, when you've been able to go retrieve a puck and then hold it along the wall and kind of fend off three or four opposing players. I don't know. You don't see a lot of guys able to do that, to kind of hold the puck, freeze the puck against the wall and fend off, you know, you see them fend off one player, maybe two, but three or four sometimes, and try to get as much of that penalty time melted away as you can before the puck gets loose again. Is that something that you've done for a long time, or is it something you've been able to do, or has it just happened? What goes into that?
I don't know where it came from, but I always kind of did it always in my career, which was like, where is the safest play to keep the puck during the penalty kill? I was like, well, behind their net, I think. I ended up kind of just going into it. You know, for me, with my body size, it's quite easy to just when you actually perch up against the wall and just make sure that you know the puck is in a good position. It's actually quite hard to get it loose, and I just started doing it. It started working, so I was like, let's keep doing it because this is kind of fun, you know, because it's nice to kind of feel their frustration of like, okay, we got 2 minutes and we spent 30 seconds trying to get the puck away from him from behind the net. I don't believe that it's quite as hard as people make it seem. It's just like that position is very fortunate. And then sometimes the opposing team kind of helps me too, especially I remember the one against Duluth. Like, they keep pinning me to the wall. So by that time, they keep actually helping me because there's two bodies, so that the other guys that are trying to help the guy that's pinning me, they have it much harder to get to the puck because, you know, he's in the way than I'm in the way. So I'm like, yep, I can be just here as long as we can. Like, it's not quite as exhausting because you basically just lean against the wall and just let them do their thing. And then I like it, you know. I think it's something that definitely a lot of people can pick up on.
Yeah, and just the fact that people have noticed it, and you know, the longer you're able to do it, if you're able to do it for, I don't know, the time against Duluth, you know, I thought it was maybe 20 seconds. People were saying 30. You know, I never really looked at the clock to start. I suppose I could go back and watch it, and maybe they'll throw a clip in here, or we'll find it later. But you know, no matter how much time, if you can get anything over 10 seconds, I think in that situation, it's probably a good thing. But if you get it up to 30, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. One thing that all of those times have in common, it always feels like way longer.
Yeah.
It always, you always hold it at you think in your head, like, okay, hey, this was like 30 seconds. You look on the clock, it was like 2 seconds. So that you just try to change as fast as you can. But I believe that it's just, you know, part of the job. You just try to kill it. You just try to prevent them from having any chances. And as long as you are having the puck, they don't have it. So,
right.
Yeah, rocket science. So, like, no, it's I think it's just something that just came up with the talents, that something that I'm good at. And, you know, if I'm good
well,
at
it. And it's really helpful in those situations because if it might help your teammates get a change, it might help you guys just get yourselves situated on your kill a little bit better. It really kind of helps you reset the game in your favor a little bit.
Absolutely. And then even defending against very good power play units, sometimes the power play is very talented inside the zone. You know, when they are all set up and they snap in the puck, that's what you like to have on a power play, and that's what the power play players like to do. But suddenly, when they suddenly have to go defend during their power play, they don't really like to do that. So it's sometimes very beneficial to exploit that or even David Cilia, like in the last few games, he had a few chances that he just straight up, okay, let's go attack during our penalty kill. Sure. And I absolutely love that because there's a lot of power play units in the NCAA that love to score goals, but they don't realize that you still can get scored on our power play.
And to have someone like David Cilia, who's, you know, I know you guys have not had as much luck scoring shorthanded this year, and you probably have felt that as much as anybody, yes, with some breakaway absolutely chances and some shots off pipes. And, you know, but you guys have created some chances, but to have maybe some of your speed and size out there and David Cilia, who, you know, for a guy who has scored as many goals as he has this season and as many points, to be as a good two-way player as there is in the CCHA, I think, you know, really is beneficial that you guys can kind of turn that into some instant offense if you have to in that situation and not just be defending.
Absolutely, especially with his talents. You know, Dave is a very intelligent player, and that's, you got to be extra careful, especially when attacking on the penalty kill, because it can quickly turn into 5-on-3 rush or something along those lines. And I believe he's very intelligent, and even there were a few times where he, you know, shuts the puck and then outworks the other guy to get it back, and then we still have the puck, and even though it's their power play, we still hold on to the puck. And he's very intelligent, he's a strong player, and as you said, like as good of a two-way player as there is in college hockey currently.
Yeah, I had a conversation this weekend. You know, David Cilia was not only first team all CCHA, but he was the CCHA forward of the year. And I know there was probably some debate about that, because I think Austin Swankler at Bowling Green had a tremendous season, had a really tremendous first half, I thought. But you kind of look at some of those other intangibles that David has done, not only leading the league in goal scoring, and I think third in the country, and certainly a lot of points, but doing those other things that we mentioned, and being a really good two-way player. You know, what's he like in practice to play against or play with? I mean, does he still bring that same kind of intelligence and attitude and skill to really push everybody else in practice as well?
I think he does, and he does more than that too. I believe that as many awards as he received this year, I still believe that he's a little bit underappreciated and underrated even, because he's absolutely a great player. Sometimes, you know, in today's game, you look up at a guy his size and, oh, he's not tall enough or something like that, which has nothing to do with his hockey skills, because those are tremendous. Playing against him in practice, I absolutely love it, because, you know, when you practice against the best, when you start playing against anyone else, it's much easier. So I love practicing against him, because he holds you accountable in a way that when you don't have a good day or something like that, like, he exploits that. He's a very good practice player, very good game player. He's consistent this year especially. I believe that in the previous year, he, with his transfer from Clarkson, he took some time to get a little bit adjusted to Coach Hastings' mentality and our system and all of that stuff. But this year, he's absolutely incredible. And as you brought up Austin Swankler, I believe that one of the reasons that David won all of the rewards on compared to him is that David has the same attitude towards attacking and scoring goals and getting points as he has towards defending. And as you said, how we talked about, you know, his addition on the penalty kill, his face-offs, all of that stuff puts him a level higher than Austin Swankler is. I believe that Austin Swankler is a great player.
Yeah.
But if you would give me a choice who I would rather defend or who would I rather play against one-on-one, I would 100% say Austin Swankler, because I feel like he's an easier player to defend than David Cilia.
Well, you mentioned face-offs, and I have to ask you this question too. So David Cilia is one of the best face-off players in the country. His winning percentage is 62.9%. Not far behind him is yourself, Mr. Pavel, at 61.1%. Obviously, face-offs have been really important to this team this year. You guys have been really good at it. And to see, you know, two centers on the same team, you know, being, you know, above 60% is really impressive. How many times do you guys go against each other in practice, and what's your winning percentage against each other?
My answer depends on if you're going to show this to Dave Silly or not. If he's going to watch this, then I'm going to say the truth. If not, then I'm going to say, yeah, I'm winning every single one of them. As you said, you know, he's incredible with like the power play percentage, especially. And then, we go against each other quite a lot, especially on the 5-on-5 or when we are running power play practices or penalty kill practices. We are usually paired up against each other. And I like it because, you know, he's that style of centerman that it's very hard to win a face-off against. He has a very low leverage. He's very strong for his size. And I believe that it's a great practice to go against him every single time. And then as good as me and David are, I think that we also have to give credit to Brendan Furry because he's also very good. For example, I was looking at the stat sheet from Saturday's game, and that was one of the reasons that I was very confident that we will prevail was that the face-off percentages, I believe that Northern Michigan is like top five.
Okay.
I think they are a very good face-off team. And I was looking at the face-off percentages, and on one side we got 70-something was me, 70-something was Celia, 70-something was Brendan. And then we look on the other side, and those were very good centermen, and they were all in the 30s, 20s, and 10 percentile. And then stuff like that can sway a hockey game in our favor. And I think it's a very big strength of our team because, you know, if you don't have the face-off, like, what can you do on a power play?
Right. I assume, I'm trying to recall, but when David went out injured in part of that game, Christian Fitzgerald got moved to the middle. I assume he took some face-offs too, and an area that he'll be relied upon in the future as well.
That too, especially on that 5-on-3 power play in the towards the end of the period, he was going against one of their best centermen, and he ended up winning both of those face-offs. So it's absolutely incredible. And then, we can debate on why exactly are we that good on face-offs or not, because I don't feel that we are that much stronger or something like that, but. What my opinion is that, it's our mentality, not towards face-offs necessarily, but towards winning our own battles.
Right.
Like when you go into that face-off, it's not just one-on-one, but it's basically like 5-on-5 or more like 3-on-3 on that circle. And we are fully committed of winning that battle. And then that's what most of the face-offs come to, that like not a lot of times it's just a clean win straight back. But when it's a 50-50 puck, we always manage to game up top of it, and that's the majority of the face-off. So, like, the credit shouldn't only go to, you know, me, David, or Brendan. It should go to the entire hockey team because we have the mentality of, well, okay, when the puck is there, we will come on top of it.
Yeah, you see that a lot, right? I mean, you see a face-off that one team might or one of the centermen might have had the advantage or controlled the puck enough to get it to a certain area, but you know the opposing winger actually wins the battle with the other winger to get that puck away, or maybe or a defenseman. So yeah, you're right. It is a full team effort on there. But you like those clean ones though, right? That go right back to a D for a shot.
Obviously, those ones are the best, and it brings up your confidence quite a lot because you're like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And it's a one battle, you know. It's like it's kind of like a competitiveness. It's at its finest because it's you and the other guy. And even as good as they are, you know, all the other guys on that dot, it's just me against him, and puck gets dropped. So it's a really good competition, I believe.
And of course, you're taking a lot of them in your own zone. So that's another one where you're trying to win it to an area and create a breakout, I suppose, from it.
It's sometimes very interesting how the mindset changes depending on where you're taking the face off. And then, of course, you got to, you know, come into the zone and you're trying to decide, okay, like, how am I going to play this? And then it depends on who you're going against and all of that stuff goes into it. So I kind of have fun with it, you know?
Well, this is this season, you're coming off a great playoff run last year. You kind of emerged and almost had your breakout last year in the NCAA tournament, and scoring some goals and really having an impact on that Frozen Four run. I think expectations were sky high for you this year. I know your points went down a little bit, but I think we've all kind of realized, you know, some of the other areas and some of those other little things that you've done so well, as we've mentioned on in this interview. Can you kind of give me an assessment of how you felt about your season as a whole, how it's gone for you? I mean, we mentioned earlier, obviously a lot of scoring chances where I think everybody in the crowd is just waiting for you to score. And obviously you got the breakaway goal against Ferris State a couple of weeks ago, but you know, what's this season been like for you?
You know, the high hopes and everything, it's interesting to play with those expectations. I wasn't necessarily putting a high expectations on myself because, you know, you should just play as good as you can no matter what. Like, it's I wouldn't get mad that I'm having only, you know, 4 goals less than I had last year or something like that. The important part is that, you know, we got our job done in the conference. We got our job done in the conference playoffs. So on that part, my season has been terrific because sure. We managed to do everything that we were set out to do when we were meeting, you know, in August. I believe that the points itself it's nice, you know, when you have regular season, you can look on your stat sheet and you're a point per game. But to be honest, going into the NCAA, like, no one cares. Like, you know, like you could have 48 goals, but then you don't score a goal in the most important moment of your season in the NCAA regionals and your season is over. Or you maybe not even, you know, As I like to say, you know, there's a lot of point per game players that are packing their bags right now.
Yeah.
And I'm still here with, you know, half something. And then, you know, we have a lot of players on our team that felt like they can have a better season or they can have more points, or they can have more assists, they can have more goals. But in the end of the day, Minnesota State made it to the regionals, and that's all that matters. And that now we're going to play against a very good St. Cloud team. So in that sense, my season has been terrific because we set out, you know, we did what we said that we will do or what we want to do. And now it's just about writing another chapter.
Well, I think that's a great way to end this the podcast. Best of luck to you and the Mavericks on Thursday against the hated Huskies of St. Cloud State. And, you know, best of luck going forward and see if you can make another Frozen Four run, a third in a row.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me here. And I'm looking forward to the Thursday night game. And I will hopefully see a lot of people there from Mankato.
All right. That's Andre Pavel. I'm Shane Frederick. This has been the Maverick Hockey Live podcast presented by Duncan. We'll see you next time.